Here's the line I never want to hear. In those treacherous winds of the south end zone of Raymond James Stadium. Dale Mabry doesn't butt up against Lake Michigan or something. I mean, well, what the hell's going on around here? I'm a kid in a candy store. Spaghetti sauce, ginger ale, chips, Virginia ham, pile it on.
Thanks for tuning in to the Ira Kaufman podcast presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford for the last 60 years and home of the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles, plus amazing 0% financing offers right now, BillCurryFord.com. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's that time again, episode 2 of this week on the Ira Kaufman podcast presented by Bill Curry Ford. I'm Steve Isbitz here from Joe Bucks Fan with Lee D. Kemper and the man of the hour, the king of Pasco County, the baron of Big Storm Beer, the sage of Tampa Bay sports. He is Uncle Ira, Mr. Ira Kaufman. He's taken off his mask and he's ready to talk some football. Ira, I got a draft thing for you here, a little angle, but how the hell are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm 2 days recovered from my trip to Publix. I walked in with a mask. Who knows what the hell they were thinking about me? I had the Sage t-shirt. Guy comes in with a Sage t-shirt and a mask. You're ready for action. Went straight to the paper aisle. Came in looking for paper towels. Walked out 27 minutes later. Cost me $125. Unbelievable. Once I get up and down those aisles, I can't stop myself. I'm a kid in a, I'm a kid in a candy store. Spaghetti sauce. Straws. Ginger ale, chips, you know, Virginia ham, pile it on.
I think it was two episodes ago. You're telling me and Lee that you got to lose 25 pounds. Ginger ale.
Those days are over. Looking for water. I'm a man in the desert. Can't find any water. But it was $125. Four people ahead of me online. Each of them had $300 orders. They don't have enough cashiers. What's going on in this world? Lee? You go into a 7-Eleven, you go into any of these places, they got 47 people manning the aisles, and they got nobody at the register. What is wrong with these stores? They don't know how to run a business.
Publix I go to, usually never any problem with the checkout.
One cashier in particular, Steve, his name's Lenny.
He doesn't own the eatery in Clearwater, right?
We're on a first name basis. I tend to gravitate towards register number 4. I know Lenny's there, and he's quick. He's fast. I don't want 22 little bags. I want 3 paper bags. That's what I want. And half the time they don't ask me paper or plastic. Next thing I know, I'm walking out with 22 plastic bags. Steve, it's way too much information. We got to talk a little Bucks right now.
Well, paper or plastic, that is the common question at the Den of Depression during Bucks games. Hopefully that will go away this year. And if Lenny's that quick and fast, maybe he could play running back, Iris. So keep an eye on him. Keep an eye on him. How old is Lenny?
Lenny looks like he's about 45, never aimed higher than a Publix cashier, happy in his job. Wasn't wearing a mask. I feel a little worried about him with all these people coming through. And by the way, my debit card didn't work. It was a beautiful cap to a horrible morning. Didn't work. I've been cut off, gentlemen. I've been cut off. Lucky I had a little cash in my pocket. Unlike Isbitz. Isbitz walks out, he's got $6 in his pocket. Everything's on a card. I'm a Brooklyn boy. You don't walk out without at least $20 in your pocket because you never know when some big tough guy's going to hold you up and you got to have 20 to give them so you avoid getting beaten up.
All right,
you're going to top that?
Now, Ira, before we get to all the fun stuff of the day, the Howard Stern interview, some stuff from Warren Sapp and all-decade team intrigue and other Bucks news, I wanted to throw back the running back you mentioned the other day, Clyde Edwards-Hilaire, your guy from LSU, that you would like to see the Bucks pick, a Darren Sproles type guy, a great pass catcher, and just an explosive threat. I was doing a little bit of research, Ira, and I came across that, you know what, Kevin Falk, who is now the running backs coach at LSU. Last year, he was just promoted. Last season, he was in a different kind of role. But Kevin Falk is there, and Falk played 13 or 14 seasons with the Patriots as a running back for Tom Brady. Similar type of back, and he's got a few Super Bowl rings, I believe. And you wonder, when we hear about Brady's influence, potential influence with personnel or with the draft, you know how that goes. A guy like Kevin Faulk, who bleeds LSU football and was a hero against the Gators many years ago for LSU, you wonder if he picks up the phone and calls his old buddy Tom Brady, and they are close, and pitches his running back, and if that gets sent down the line. You think it works like that, Ira?
That's outstanding research, Stephen. Outstanding. Yeah, Faulk was a go-to guy for many years for Brady. Close relationship. They have a bond. I don't think what you just described is a far-fetched scenario, and I think Brady would be eager to give his 2 cents. Now, Brady's not going to make the pick, and I don't think he's going to overrule Jason Light and his scouts at that point. What's interesting, guys, is, you know, I do the Identity Tampa 2 with Derek Brooks every week, and he's very high on Cam Akers, and Lee, you know why, besides the fact he thinks he'd be a terrific addition for the Bucks. He happens to play for the Garnet and Gold, and also an accomplished receiver out of the backfield. It's going to be interesting. You might have Brooks, you know, weighing in at one buck place with Cam Akers, and then you could have Brady weighing in with Hilaire. It's going to be an interesting scenario, Lee.
Well, Akers wouldn't be a bad pick either, and I'm high on Akers for this reason and this reason alone. He produced behind as one of the worst offensive lines in the nation. You know, people whine about the Bucks offensive line. They should go watch a Florida State game or two on YouTube from last year to get an idea what a bad offensive line is. It was truly heinous. And the fact that Cam Akers produced despite zero blocking, I mean zero blocking, that to me, that's getting a job done. That's a guy that's got talent. He goes to the Bucks, this Cam Akers, he thinks he'd be behind the Raiders offensive line of the 70s.
You know, Lee, that's a big point Brooks makes in talking up Akers. You know, a bad team going nowhere, and Akers' production, you know, never slipped. And he thought that was a mark of his competitiveness, and it will serve him well in the NFL. And by the way, speaking of offensive line, Steve, and I'm sure you caught this, in my interview with Booger McFarland when he was talking about all the reasons why expectations this year may augur well as opposed to coming off 2016, he talked about the duo at wide receiver, talked about the duo at tight end, and he said, quote, Steve, an above-average offensive line. Steve, are we buying that? An above-average offensive line? I don't know if I'm going there.
Well, it's a great debate among Bucks fans, and I still have to go back to the production. I just believe that the offensive line is above average when it comes to pass blocking. I don't think that's really deniable, but I know some people will deny that. And as far as run blocking, well, they haven't had a running back, and that makes you look a lot better when you have a running back. And I don't think they schemed the runs very well. You just didn't see much of that. So, but I'm not calling them good run blockers, but I think they're at least average. I got to go with at least average.
Top
15?
Lee, to Steve's point about pass blocking, I would tend to agree with him, but Lee, the facts are, the numbers are, you know, Winston got sacked a lot last year. He did.
He took a lot of hits, too. Part of that is, you know, Aaron's, you know, 5 and 7 step drops. You got to wait a while for the guys to get open downfield. That's an element as well. But,
yeah.
You know, I've seen bad offensive lines. But, you know, when people say the Bucks offensive line is bad, the first thing I ask them, I said, did you become a Bucks fan last year or 2 years ago? The reason why I say that is, Anthony Collins, Garrett Wilkes Gilkey, O'Neal Cousins. Now that, friends, was a rotten offensive line. So this offensive line's light years better than that. And I'm not saying it's light years that it's great. It's not the 70s Raiders, not the 70s Cardinals, it's not the aught Cowboys, but it's not what the Bucks had a couple years ago. First year of the horrid Love You regime. That, you know, friends, was bad.
Steve, on the flip side, Steve, is it fair to say, I think it is, that in the 45 years of professional football, this franchise has never had an elite offensive line? Steve, is that fair to say? I think it is.
It's fair to say, although I forget exactly which season. I think it might have been after the 2012 season. When they were coming back in 2013, there were a lot of preseason reports about how the Bucks had a top five offensive line. I remember specifically watching Sean O'Hara talk about the group, how much he liked them coming off Doug Martin running for all those yards and Josh Freeman putting up all those yards in the air in 2012. So that group was a very strong group. Yeah. Penn was the left tackle. You had Jeremy Zuta in there. You had,
That's right.
A younger version of Dotson. Okay. I don't know. I have to take a look, but you know, it was, that wasn't a bad group, but elite? No, not elite.
I seem to recall either Chucky's last year or second last year. He had a pretty darn good offensive line.
They had Davin Joseph. They had Davin Joseph.
Davin Joseph was young. I forget the guy's name.
Yeah, they had Aaron Sears, and they had just...
Aaron Sears, the guy who went cuckoo, yeah.
They had just signed Fain. Yeah. And
True Blood was still halfway decent at the time. I can't remember who was left tackle, but that was a pretty decent offensive line. That was...
Yeah, it was Penn. Cool. Penn was the starter that last year. He took over.
And, you know, the O-line got a lot better in the championship 2002 season. And by the time the postseason rolled around, they were doing a very nice job. That was a nice mix of the youth with Kenyatta Walker and veterans like Roman Oben. That was not a bad unit, Steve, in 2002.
That's all you need to know. Kenyatta Walker. A little week or so ago when they rebroadcast the Bucks-Raiders Super Bowl, they were rebroadcasting the Super Bowl, and sure enough, Kenyatta Walker got a flag for hands to the face.
You know, Steve, speaking of the offensive line, I think there's a consensus. A consensus is building among the so-called experts, the McShays and guys like that, that the Bucks are going to take a tackle at 14, figuring one of those big four would fall. I'm starting to think that way too, Steve, although I think a defensive lineman would not be a bad choice.
Well, we're going to find out, which is the easy answer. You know, I still go back to, I wonder when Arians was a rookie head coach and he drafted guard Jonathan Cooper in his first year and the guy was a bust. How much did that really affect Arians' psyche? When it comes to offensive linemen, we know he spoke years later about how you don't draft a guy like that because he's going to be drafted for the next head coach. So I wonder where that really sits now in the back of Arian's head. But yeah, we'll find out. That's what makes draft day so exciting. Sage, I want to throw you this curveball real quick. Totally different mindset because I don't think we ever talked about it. And it became clear to me last night listening to Cameron Jordan. You know, we talk about Brady and all that he's going to do for the Bucks, but the Bucks have been a garbage team for a lot of years, and when that happens, you don't get night games, you don't get primetime games, and you don't get the A game of the team you're facing necessarily all the time because, well, you're the Bucks. And now with Brady here, I'm listening to Cameron Jordan the other night talking about how excited he is to hit him and to have him in the division and to have, quote, more times to hit him, have the Saints make their mark against Brady. And I think what's overlooked is all those primetime games and all of the hype that's going to surround every game with Brady, you're going to get a jacked up team that you're playing against. So the Bucks aren't used to that.
That's a fair point, Steve, but I'll give you the flip side is that the Bucks have never been as jacked up as they're going to be with Tom Brady and specifically the offensive line. Lee, we've talked about you don't want to be the offensive lineman that missed the block and let the guy get a clean shot at number 12. I mean, Buck fans will never forgive that. And I'll tell you who also won't forgive it. Bruce Arians, Lee. So there's going to be a heightened sense of responsibility, especially up front. And Lee, I think protecting Brady might be the highest priority of this team going into 2020. He's the franchise. He's the face. He's the reason that they're selling the merchandise out the yin-yang. And he's the reason there's going to be another 10,000 fannies in the seats. You got to protect Brady. And I agree with Steve, you know, these primetime games, the Bucks will be taken more seriously than they've been in the past as an opponent. But, Lee, according to Booger McFarland, Brady's effect will go across this entire roster and raise everybody's level. So there's two ways to look at it.
What do you think about what Al Michaels said, Ira? That, he was talking on Mike Tirico's show, and he had a Brady story. Of course, they were going through the Brady interview with Howard Stern. And He was just talking about a story with Brady and about how Michael's made a bet, and it's a substantial bet, and it looks like he's got to pay the bet off, that he had bet that Brady would be with the Patriots this year. And then Michaels was saying, and I guess I got to pay the guy by the time we see Tampa Bay play this season. So it sounds like someone tipped him off. They're going to be on Sunday Night Football.
Well, that shouldn't shock anybody, Lee. Most people have the Bucks pegged for four night games. And it's not because, little Ali Marpet, gentlemen. We all know why.
And his dog.
And Brady Mania, it's not contained just to Tampa Bay, guys. Why is he on Stern for 2 hours?
All right, Sage, I want to get some of your takes on that Stern interview, which was crossed many boundaries and went many directions, including naked men in the locker room and Brady's opinion on penises and things like that. So there's a lot to talk about there.
I'm not going there, Isbeth. I'm not going there.
I didn't think you would. I just wanted to shock you a little bit, Ira. Wake you up a little bit. All right, Sage, your podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford. And what people need to know about Bill Curry Ford is the 0% financing offers are extraordinary right now because interest rates have dropped. Ford is helping customers in a big way by making the first few payments. They're deferring payments so you can get in a vehicle and not have to make a payment for quite a while. And of course, what makes Bill Curry Ford extra special is the personal service available from General Manager Sean Sullivan and the Bill Curry family, which is family-owned, Tampa's first family of Ford for the last 60 years, a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. Sean will answer your questions personally. You can call him, you can email him, you can just stop in. The dealership is all set up for social distancing, and you don't have to have three salesmen in the car breathing on you when you take a test drive. You can go out yourself, and it's just a wonderful dealership, and I'm so glad that so many of your listeners, Ira, have supported Bill Curry Ford, and I hope you're still enjoying the 2020 Ford Escape.
Did you notice that our man Travis Combs, I believe, just went in and purchased a new vehicle, and it looked like a beauty. He showed me a picture of it over at Bill Curry Ford. And by the way, Steve, it's worth mentioning, Sean Sullivan, besides being one heck of a manager, he is a hardcore Bucks fan and very knowledgeable and a draft pundit. And we're going to have him on this podcast before the draft. You could start off talking football with Sean Sullivan when you go into the showroom, but he's going to get you into a car because he's going to make you a deal that you can't believe.
Yeah, beautiful F-150 vehicles. All of them, really almost all of them, have 0% financing attached. BillCurryFord.com is the website. Coach Combs, of course, just a fan of Ira, a guy, a listener, a reader who comes out to hang out with you, Ira, when you're at Big Storm Brewery. He will be there this year because that's where you are going to be watching all the games, all the road games. Big Storm Brewery in Clearwater, their 49th Street location, drinking all kinds of Big Storm beer, which is the official beer of this podcast, BigStormBrewery.com. They sell food, too. They'll deliver it to you with beer from their Odessa tap rooms or Clearwater tap rooms, BigStormBrewery.com. And Ira, I'm sure you've seen the television reports. They converted some of their manufacturing to produce hand sanitizer. It's become a national story. Big Storm Brewery serving the community that way, distributing it to various entities around the country. Fantastic story. All right, Sage. Let's head over to this Howard Stern interview. What are your major impressions from a two-hour-plus interview? Give me a couple of big Ira takeaways. Go ahead.
I was a little surprised that Brady said that going into the 2019 season, it was basically, a fait accompli that he was going to leave Foxborough, that it was going to be his last season with the Patriots. That surprised me a little bit. I've been saying the reason for his departure, in my opinion, and I don't think he would say it, I think he's got too much pride to say it, Lee, is he didn't feel the love from the man in the hoodie. Lee, I know it sounds a little simplistic, but I don't think it goes much further than that. If it's up to Bob Kraft, Lee, Brady's got another 2-3 year contract with the Patriots. I don't think there's any question about it. In this case, Kraft didn't want to overrule Belichick. Belichick was ready to move on. Now, Brady doesn't want to say that, Lee, because it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like a sign of weakness. Hey, my coach didn't appreciate me. My coach didn't want me. But, Lee, I was a little surprised that he said that he knew he was kind of leaving, even going into the full season. I was shocked he said that.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I'm shocked. I have no opinion about that. But what I thought was interesting.
And they were coming off a Super Bowl championship, Lee. Super Bowl championship.
What I thought was interesting was Stern basically asked, you know, Stern doesn't know who Jason Light is, and Stern asked Brady if the point person with the Bucks performed a lurid act on him to get him to come to Tampa Bay. Brady didn't exactly deny it.
Well, you know, he's excited. He's excited for his new challenge. And I think in his mind, if he can turn around this moribund franchise, snap a 12-year playoff drought, what a final chapter that would be for his career, Steve. But,
yeah,
you know, Stern is masterful, as Lee pointed out before this podcast even started. Steve, that interview was not off to a rip-roaring start. It was dragging. You know, when you last this long in a competitive business like Stern, like Steve Dumig, the big dog here in Tampa, 25 years, the man on local sports radio, you got to know what you're doing. It's not an accident. And Stern knows how to bring out, you know, the provocative answers in his guests, and it got better as it went on, Steve.
Yeah, it certainly did. 2+ hours, fantastic stuff. And, you know, it's fascinating, really, that Brady's never done an interview like that in all these years. And he was happy to be there. Clearly a huge Howard Stern fan. He said that he listened to him for 13, 15 years in a row, 45 minutes a day. You know, I think he got over his nerves. And for Tom Brady to be nervous early in an interview when he has been everywhere for 20 years, very telling, very interesting.
You remember in the interview, Brady said that Stern big leagued him about 12 years ago?
Yeah, I think it was about, it was 2002 or something like that.
Think about that. Think about what he's saying. We're talking Brady, you know, one of the biggest names in sports and entertainment. Yes, I know football fans, it'll drive you nuts. He's a crossover guy. He said Stern big leaguing. That's how big Stern is. I mean, Stern's a monster. That's number one. Number two, you know, and you mentioned this, Steve, that, you know, Brady's never done anything like this before. I'm just going to guess that was frowned upon with the powers that be at Patriot Way.
Yes. Yes, no question about it. And Steve, he also lowered the veil in kind of a shocking way on his marriage. I mean, you know, it was almost like he was laying on a couch and Stern was sitting in a chair in a marriage counselor's office and telling the world that his wife was not happy with the time he was putting in with OTAs and everything. And that would never happen if Brady was still in Foxborough.
You know what, Ira, what you just said is you hit the nail on the head. Stern is such a good interviewer. He somehow gets his interviewees so comfortable that it's like they're talking to a guy over a beer in a bar or something. They open up. That's Stern's gifted at that. And that's a perfect example of why Stern's such a good interviewer. And I also think Brady probably didn't want to say that in New England because, number one, he was still playing for New England. Number two, If Brady comes out and says, yeah, I couldn't go to OTAs because my wife was said the marriage was falling apart, so I had to stay home. Can you imagine what kind of reception she would have got, Giselle, at Patriots games from those crazy fans? She'd need three armed guards by her. She wouldn't be able to go to the games.
And we got to make sure that Steve Isbitz never goes on Stern Show because can you imagine the nuggets that Isbitz would spill over an hour? Oh, my God.
Don't worry about that happening, Ira. I'm not getting an invite anytime soon.
What'd you think of his? What'd you think of the stuff about his marriage, Steve?
Oh, I don't give a crap. So his wife tells him to, you know, you got to drive the kids to school, Tom, and quit working out and hanging out with Gronk while I take care of the kids. I mean, it's not that surprising. You know, she...
The OTAs? That didn't surprise you?
No, not at all. She had been out there previously, and it was public. This wasn't anything hidden at all. She was out there previously. There was tons of chatter years past that she wanted him to retire because of didn't want him to take concussions and hits and stuff. So I wasn't impressed with when I say not impressed, I was impressed that he brought it out there in the interview. It was very interesting, but I didn't think it was, it's not like she left him for a month or something and it was some big trauma going on. She told him what she wanted and you know, who wouldn't want to please Giselle, right?
Absolutely.
All right, Sage, two things I think are important. Going back to the Robert Kraft thing, I watched a historical piece on NFL Network last week or 2 weeks ago, and if I wish I had seen it a month ago before this whole Brady thing, because it was very telling. Going back to Drew Bledsoe, Drew Bledsoe was the face of the franchise, number one overall pick. He had been to the Super Bowl. He was extremely well-liked, and Bill Belichick told Kraft, got to make the switch from Bledsoe to Brady, and Bledsoe was hurt. That's why they made the switch. And Kraft spoke in this documentary saying that, you know what, I could have overruled Belichick. He was a younger coach, and I didn't do it. I trusted Bill, and it was the best thing I ever did. So when you hear that and you fast forward 18 years, you realize, hey, I trusted him last time it worked. I'm going to trust him again. No matter how much I love Drew Bledsoe, this worked out. And I don't know. I just thought that was interesting historical perspective.
You know, Lee, one of the offshoots of Brady's departure from Foxborough is it's really put in the forefront something that's been murmured about in New England for a long time, Lee, and you can weigh in on this. A lot of the people that have been covering the Patriots for a long time, like Mike Reese and there's some other ones up there, Tom Curran. Behind the scenes, they've always debated this, like, who was more important, Belichick or Brady? It's a big, big topic up there. It's been below the surface for two decades as the Super Bowl mounted. The easy answer is they both needed each other. That's the easy answer. Most people would give the nod to Brady. I'm not so sure I'm going there, Lee, and I'll say this. Anybody who thinks Belichick's going to fall on his ass and go 5-11 this fall, I think those people are crazy. That's not going to happen.
You bring up something that just amuses me to no end about the Brady-Belichick debate. A couple days ago, that, I guess, was a debate on that show, Stay in Bed, that ESPN has. I don't watch it. I mean, I'll see clips on Twitter, but I won't watch it. And anyway, Rex Ryan said, let's see Belichick win a division with Geno Smith. And apparently Geno Smith is absolutely outraged at Ryan.
You're right. You're right. You know, Steve, the only evidence we have is that year that Brady got hurt, and I believe it was the opening game. And they ended up winning 11 games, Steve. They did not make the playoffs. They did not. Through a fluke, you know, of the way the standings ended that year.
Yep.
You would think 11 would get you in, Steve, even without the extra playoff berth that is going to start this fall. But Steve, Matt Cassel, who I guess ended up being a Pro Bowler, later on, but nobody looks at Matt Cassel, you know, with any great fondness. He did win 11 games with Cassel. So, Steve, I think they both needed each other. I'm okay with that. But I don't think Belichick's going to flop without Brady.
Yeah, Brady's quote was that it's a shitty argument because Belichick can't do my job and I can't do Belichick's job. So it's a stupid argument. And that's I think Rex Ryan responded to that. It was a great line, though. Yeah, let's see him win with Geno Smith. That was a fantastic line.
And then Geno Smith gets all bent out of shape.
Yeah, fantastic. Ira, one thing that came up is just a little subtlety. Little subtlety that came up. They asked Brady about his house. Stern said something like, hey, you know, I heard the walls are higher there. Jeter got permission when he built the house to have higher walls, so he got a lot of privacy. And Brady said, yeah, it's great, except he didn't realize, he said this, he didn't realize that living on the water meant boats would pull up right to your backyard. And so the implication was that Brady's, you know, hanging out in the back and he's seeing a bunch of looky-loos driving by from South Tampa on their motorboats, drinking beer, trying to get a picture of Brady. I really felt that he sort of said that he wasn't planning on that, and he seemed like a guy who's never lived on the water before.
Well, thank God the Kemper doesn't own a kayak. Well, otherwise, this would be a whole different discussion over here. Whatever media we have left in this town, and it seems to be dwindling, you could imagine there will be some semi-invasions of privacy, although once you're on the water, You know, they can't tell you where to go. It's not Brady property at that point, or Jeter property. But, Lee, there's going to be a lot of onlookers, the curiosity, the casual fan. Heck, I hate to think about what's going to happen during Gasparilla. The Brady should get out of town, Lee, but thank God you don't have a kayak, the Kemper.
Didn't he mention people are walking right off to the sidewalk, right up to the front of the house, the driveway?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, ESPN actually had pictures on their website of fans taking selfies in front of his house. You know, that'll eventually die out, but I think he said he was kind of used to that part of, you know, people driving by all the time. And of course, it's gated and all that, but the water end of it, you know, like you said, Ira, there's going to be some kayak folks hanging out there. You know, some guys, hey, let's just drink some beer and just hang out by Brady's house, you know.
Back in my younger days, when I used to go scuba diving all the time, we'd go out of Clearwater, and almost every time we took off out of Clearwater, they would point out, hey, that was Hulk Hogan's house, you know, which Hulk Hogan had a big house on the water in Clearwater Beach. Right next to his house was a boathouse, which I had never seen before, and that was a big point. They'd go, hey, look at that boathouse. That's bigger than my house, you know.
And
everybody was, that was a big thing. Everybody would be, you know, that was before cell phones and selfies, but that was a big thing. Everybody was, hey, it's Hulk Hogan's house.
You know who had a great place on Davis Island? The late, great Tom McEwen.
Yeah.
That's where he lived, you know, a short hop to the Tampa Trib office in downtown. And he had an annual party, and it was tremendous. He'd invite everybody, and the whole staff would show up. McEwen would make speeches. One year he was like General Patton. He gave the speech at the beginning of that movie, Patton, and talked about the you know, we're going to war against the St. Petersburg Times and all you pansies that aren't ready for war. You might as well get the heck out of here. And, you know, and the party was catered. It was outstanding. And
you put your hands in a bunch of goo that a moment before was your best friend's face, you'll know what to do.
And it was probably only a block or two from the Jeter residence, but I always enjoyed going to him. And McEwen was a man of the people, gentlemen. I mean, the guy would play golf with Steinbrenner, Bear Bryant, and John McKay, and then the next day he's having a party, and he's got all these Trib people there. That's Tom McEwen.
Yeah, back when sports editors of newspapers actually had power in a town, and now you
have
the power, Ira, as the sage of Tampa Bay sports. You have taken the mantle from Tom McEwen.
You know, Steve, you make a good point. I mean, you're only half kidding, but Lee, you know this. Guys like
I'm not kidding.
Ed Pope in Miami.
Yeah.
Lee Sid Hartman in Minneapolis. Maybe there was a guy in St. Louis. I don't know if there was.
Probably Bob Bragg.
That sports columnist, you know, way back when and to a lesser extent now, really had a lot of clout, Steve.
Well, Ira, to your point, Bernie Miklos might have been one of those guys. I know you know Bernie, and of course I know Bernie. You know, I've known him forever. Bernie, when he had a radio show as well, he would pound the drum on his radio show. This town is not getting an NFL team unless they get a dome. And he was largely responsible for people, you know, the heavy hitters of the city getting together. And like, well, I guess he's right. He covers the NFL. He knows. And so Bernie was literally largely responsible for building that dome downtown. And, of course, if they didn't have that dome, the Rams don't move there. But also, Ira, if I remember right, wasn't Ed Pope down in Miami sort of responsible for Don Shula coming there?
I believe that's right. I believe that story's right. And, Steve, I'll wrap it up with this one. Dick Young, you know, Hall of Fame baseball writer, Daily News. He ended up with the New York Post, which was shocking that he would leave the News where he made his name. But, you know, maybe the preeminent baseball writer of his time. Steve, he basically got Tom Seaver off the Mets. I mean, it doesn't get any bigger than that in New York. Because he started writing some stories about Seaver's wife, and Seaver couldn't stand that, and he ended up asking for trade. He ended up on the Cincinnati Reds, Lee, it doesn't get any better about getting Seaver out of New York in those days. Whatever you think about Seaver, you cannot overstate how great he was, Steve. He was that great.
Ira, if you ever catch up to Scott Pioli, ask him how much he cried his eyes out when Tom Seaver was traded. He'll tell you a great story. And he's actually the guy who's labeled one of two guys responsible for drafting Tom Brady back in the day with the Patriots. All right, Ira, we're going to run through a couple of things rapid fire. I ask you to move quickly. Next thing you know, you're talking about Dick Young and Tom McEwen. Come on. All right. Last thing we'll mention about Brady. He mentioned Bruce Arians and said he liked his authenticity and that he was authentic and he heard he was authentic and he looks forward to getting to know him. What did you make of the authenticity comment?
That's about as far as Tom Brady's ever going to go in terms of taking a slap at Bill Belichick, Lee. I don't think it takes a great parser of words to realize that while he's talking about Arians, he's also talking about the coach that he just left after 20 years, Lee. That's as far as he'll go in criticizing Belichick, I think.
That was interesting, what he meant by that, yeah.
Yeah, I took it that way, too, that, hey, if you come from one coach for 20 years and the thing that stands out about the new guy is authenticity, that says a lot. So I'm glad you had the same idea, Ira. And Warren Sapp, Ira, quickly, he spoke on Fox, one of the Fox TV shows, and he had a quote. He was asked about Jameis, of course, and Sapp quoted what he called his sources, and we know that he has a pipeline to the Glazers and to everybody in charge at One Buck, and especially the Glazers. You know they have a fondness for him. Sapp said that he heard that Jameis was basically not translating what he learned on the practice field to the games. That he would great on the practice field, great in the film room, and then it would come down to game time, and they would tell him, hey, we're going to look short and then go long. And Jameis would look short, throw short, and it would get picked. And Sapp basically implied that when you put that together with interceptions and other things, then you got to move on, even though he likes Jameis. What do you make of Sapp saying that about the film stuff? Where's he getting that?
A couple of things, Lee. One, Sapp's not making it up out of the air, Lee. We know how things work. We know dynamics.
Well, it sounds absolutely legitimate.
Well, I'm saying somebody or more than one person is telling Sapp that from inside One Buck Place. Yeah, he's not just making that up. Could be Brooks. So Brooks is getting it from somebody inside One Buck Place.
We know how
close Sapp and Brooks are. Lee, if that's true, that can't happen in year five. That can't happen in year five of a quarterback. He's not a rookie anymore. And, Lee, I think it goes back to what I've said for a long time. You hear the phrase moment of truth with Winston, Lee, during his 5 years as a pro. It's the 3 seconds of truth. And that's the 3 seconds when the pass rushers are closing in and he's got to make a decision and he doesn't make the right decision. And that's why Tom Brady's going to be under center, because he does make the right decision. Got nothing to do with arm strength, fitting a ball into a tight window. It's making that decision under duress. And Winston wasn't good at it. He couldn't bring something from the practice field to the playing field. Lee, after 5 years, no wonder they're moving on, if that's true.
All right, Sage, your podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford. We remind everybody, BillCurryFord.com, where you can start shopping and reach out to General Manager Sean Sullivan directly. He is the boss. He will help you. You will get a Joe Bucks fan, Ira Kaufman discount, and or you will be treated like you've never been treated before, BillCurryFord.com. Ira, All-Decade Team came out, and that's a big deal. You had a vote along with your Hall of Fame peers. Levante David, who you voted for, did not make it, and that was a bit of a disappointment. I don't think you voted for Patrick Willis, so I wanted to ask you about that. And one other thing I wanted to mention, Ira, I looked at that list, and I went back, I dissected it, and my quick count, 18 of the players on the All-Decade Team, 18 changed clubs in their prime. And so all the time you hear, oh, great players, you can't get them in free agency, you can't get them when via trade. Teams don't give up on him. 18. I wanted to throw that out at you.
That is a big, big number, 18. There were a couple of close calls from a Buck perspective for a team that didn't make the playoffs during a whole decade. Lee, that's a little surprising. I thought Lavonne David is deserving. You know, I faced this with the John Lynch presentation. This all-decade thing, it can be a little arbitrary in terms of, you know, some guys play only 4 or 5 years out of that decade. They're tremendous. Calvin Johnson, what are you going to do with this guy? He's up for the Hall of Fame this year. That means he's been out of football for 5 years. And the decade just ended. What do you do with Calvin Johnson? Do you not name him one of the receivers? So, Lee, it gets a little dicey. I thought Lavonte David, they asked for 6 linebackers. I named him one of my 6 linebackers. He's been there since 2012. He's been very consistent. McCoy was a tough one. It was a tough one. I had him at number 5. They picked 4 defensive tackles. I think once you get past Aaron Donald, it's tough with Sue, Atkins, Cox. I had McCoy 5th. Buck fans, Lee, might have him 10th. But I think McCoy had a very good decade with the Bucks. You can't argue with the pick as the number 3 pick. He was a perennial pro bowler. But, Lee, no members of the all-decade team. And you know, Lee, for a fact that the relative anonymity of this franchise over this decade played a major role in that.
Sure, the losing and the lost decade.
Ira, Tyrann Mathieu and Chris Harris, who was a free agent this year. Both of them made it as the alternate defensive backs, whatever you, or like swing defensive backs, whatever you want to call them. Can you explain right. that position? And again, those are two guys who also hit free agency in their prime.
I've never seen that before, Lee. They also added a flex position. I don't think they'd ever done that before. It looked like the format has changed this year. There was always a first team and a second team. That's gone by the board, and you know what? I think they need to recalculate the votes and name a first team and a second team. I'm sure McCoy would make the second team. I'm almost positive Lavonte would make the second team of linebackers. The format has switched a little bit, and this extra DB, I don't even know that's necessary, Lee, but it did squeeze in the Honey Badger and Chris Harris.
All right, Sage, we have just finished up with Jason Light, the Zoom conference call, and I must say I was very impressed that you figured out how to ask a question with the technology, but no Cosmo. I don't know why Cosmo wasn't sitting with you. I would have rather looked at him than Rick Stroud, but anyway, Ira, I have to ask you for your impressions of this pre-draft news conference.
As you point out, I did ask 2 questions over there, which is 2 more than I asked Lavonte David and 2 more than I asked Bruce Arians, because I couldn't figure out whether it was 5-star or star 5 with Arians, and I ended up getting shut out over there. Lee, it was interesting to see Mr. Light in his man cave. You know, I didn't see a picture of Farrah Fawcett, didn't see that poster up there. It was a little surprise.
Jacqueline Smith was hotter.
Oh, Jacqueline Smith, not bad. You know, Light answered all the questions. The one he dodged is the one DeKemper can't wait to talk about, which is, have you been contacted by Rob Gronkowski?
Yeah, he didn't answer that directly, sort of said that he preferred to stick to the draft, and, you know, he kind of dodged it. But, Ira, what really stood out to you, though? What one of his answers, you know, he talked about process, he talked about running backs, he talked about quarterback. What really pushed your buttons, if anything at all?
Well, I think this is what makes the 2020 draft so very unique for the Bucs. Going back, I would think, to Gruden's last season. I mean, that's a long time, Lee, 12 years since the Bucs had this certain kind of a dynamic about all in. And when you're all in, which they are with a 42-year-old quarterback, it's got to affect the way you approach the draft. And, Lee, in that regard, I mean, you have to go in there with a first-round pick that's going to have an immediate impact. Immediate. So you're not taking a quarterback that you're going to groom or anything like that. And, Lee, in that regard,
I thought it was interesting. I tried to pin light about this best player available, Lee. They all say it, and very few of them do it. You know, you can track all the teams, and it almost always comes back to, hey, that was a glaring position of need, and they took one. Well, for the Bucks, it would be offensive tackle. For the Bucks, it would be running back. For the Bucks, it might be safety. But, Lee, what if those four offensive tackles are gone, and one of those Alabama receivers are there at 14? You mull it over and you think it over, and in terms of immediate impact, and Light didn't piss on it at all.
No.
You know, he didn't say he wouldn't take, you know, Ruggs or Judy or Lamb. It's a very interesting scenario, especially if those four top tackles are off the board, Lee.
No, he clearly did not write off any chances of drafting a wide receiver in round one. He didn't. And as far as the tackle, you ask about the tackle, those four guys are gone. Well, I know the Bucks, and this happened before the coronavirus hit, the Bucks had worked out a tackle from Boise State. And I mentioned that to Sean Sullivan, who's, I guess, our local draft guru. And Sean Sullivan said, this guy's pretty good. And obviously he didn't put him up there with Wirfs and Becton and those guys. But he said, this guy's pretty good. So it could be they have their eyes on him second round. Who knows? But, yeah, I mean, Luke Easton threw that out there a couple weeks ago that don't be shocked if the Bucks take a wide receiver. If you're looking for a guy who can make the biggest impact right away, he said don't be shocked if they take a wide receiver.
And Steve, here's another offshoot of this kind of dynamic, of the win-now dynamic, Steve. I mean, most draft pundits and people doing the mocks that we respect, they see a flurry, you know, I think the Giants are going to take a tackle at four, but it's like between picks 8 and 13, Steve, like three offensive tackles could fly off the board. So in the thinking of, you know, we got to go all in for 2020, would Light make a move up the board from 14 to 10? Depending on the cost, where normally in a normal year with Jameis Winston, he would not do it. I think the Brady presence changes a lot of thinking at one Buck place.
I think it does too, Ira. That's why I asked the question, does the presence of Tom Brady change things, make it quick impact guy, and how does that work? I thought Light was very interesting when he said you might trend toward a smarter player because of the limited coaching time due to the coronavirus. I thought that was kind of an interesting angle. But I honestly think the presence of Brady makes them more likely to trade down. Because if you know what you're doing, and that's a big if you know what you're doing, you're going to be able to get a haul like you got in 2018 when they traded back and got Vea and the multiple second-round picks. If you know what you're doing, you can do something like that and score two impact players instead of, you know, or hit two out of three instead of one out of two, or one out of one if you trade up and have to move a second-round pick. I just think, as Mark Dominic said, not that I'm the biggest Mark Dominic fan, but he said on Sirius the other day that, you know, the Bucks might be very tempted to trade back four or five spots and grab a running back and use that extra second-round pick.
You know, Lee, to me, the trade back philosophy, to me, Lee, is more likely if you have a young team with a young quarterback and you want to get better every year and peak 2 or 3 years down the road and develop these young players. Lee, I don't see that philosophy holding court at one buck right now.
No, I'm not saying just because Brady's there they won't trade back and stock up on draft picks. I'm not there yet. But the likelihood that they stay put or draft up is more likely, yes.
And I think, Steve, I think they see some holes, even though they never want to begrudge, you know, our point about the running backs. They never want to talk about it. You know, we love Ronald Jones and this guy, and we like our stable and obviously right tackle. You know, if you count Joe Haig as a swing backup, which to me, I think that's his role or should be. Steve, I think those are things that you have to address right away for 2020 to be a success. You have to give Brady all the surrounding weapons and supporting cast you can with outstanding players.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense, Ira. You know, Lee and I threw out the thought of drafting a quarterback in the first round. And while that's probably in the best long-term interest of the franchise, if they found the guy they liked, huge if there, but it doesn't make sense for this season to do something like that. You got to go all in. And reality is, this might be your only season with Brady at his peak. This might be your last elite season from Brady. So you have to just go for broke. I don't know if they'll be willing to do that, because I think that would entail really investing in a running back and maybe another pass rusher, because I think the pass rusher is more valuable than the right tackle. That's just me. So I don't know if they're willing to do that, Ira. Lee, what do you think?
Well, you hit the nail on the head, Steve. It is. I mean, if you talk to any NFL guy, what's more important, a right tackle or a pass rusher? I mean, they can't say pass rusher quick enough. And I always mention this to Ira. Gil Brandt talks about this all the time. Matter of fact, it's in the intro on his show when he co-hosts Late Hits with Alex Marvez on NFL Radio. Brandt says the three most important players on our team, number one, quarterback, number two, pass rusher, number three, left tackle.
I agree, but I will counter with this suggestion too, gentlemen. If you load up offense in an offensive league, in a pass-happy league, and I don't want to use the word balance because it drives DeKemper crazy. You don't care about balanced offense. But, you know, if you get a right tackle and you get a running back and you have a credible running game and all of a sudden your play action is effective, which the Bucs hasn't been since Dirk Cutter was calling plays as coordinator, Steve, all of a sudden, maybe your defense is on the field for 60 snaps instead of 70, and all of a sudden your defense looks a lot better just in that regard.
I agree with you, Ira. It's the whole stupid line of, not that you're stupid, but the line of complimentary football, which, you know, the Bucs haven't played a lot of that, but coaches love to talk about it. Teddy Bruschi, I heard him on the radio, Ira, in Boston. It was kind of funny because Bruschi, who obviously is a big Brady fan, big Brady supporter, he was telling the hosts there that he thinks Brady adds 2 to 3 wins to the Bucs. He couldn't peg himself on 2 or 3, saying 2 to 3, 9 or 10 win team, and he thought they'd be a 9 or 10 win team last year if Brady was there instead of Jameis. And I thought that was very interesting because the hosts said, what are you talking about? Tom Brady, blah, blah, blah. He's like, no, 2 or 3 wins. The biggest impact of Brady will be making the defense better because they'll be uplifted because they have a quarterback they believe in and isn't going to turn the ball over and throw him back on short fields. And they'll be on the field a little bit less, which really sort of ties to what you're saying. But I thought it was kind of funny to hear, you know, fans of the Patriots argue with Bruschi that, no, he's getting, they Bucks would have won 12 games with Tom Brady last year. And he's like, no, not really.
Well, Lee, I'll tell you who thinks that the Bucks would have won 10 games with Brady in 2019, and that's Bruce Arians. Lee, I think Bruce Arians believes that down to his bones. All Arians thought about on January 3rd, when he was, mulling over his soup and wondering what the heck went wrong in a 7-9 season, all he thought about was the number 41. That was it. Number 41. That's the number of giveaways. And no team in the league was close. And was it Winston's fault for all of them? No, but chop it up any way you want. The Bucs committed 41 giveaways. Their takeaway total wasn't bad, Lee. It was 28. That's not bad. If it was 20, they'd be minus 21 in turnover differential instead of minus 13, which is bad enough, but it wasn't the worst in the league. But the 41 giveaways, Lee, they scored a ton of points despite it and won 7 games despite it. And all Arians is thinking about is, if we can stop beating ourselves, we're going to be tough to beat. That was his takeaway line, Lee, on his final press conference of the season.
Speaking of Bucks beating Bucks, how do you think Brady's going to tolerate, for the first time in his NFL career, being on the same team as a lousy kicker?
I think anybody is going to be immune from Brady's ire. I don't care that it's his first year in this locker room. I don't care that he might feel there's some other leaders on this team. He doesn't want to overstep Levante David's bounds or whatever, Mike Evans. I don't think that's going to matter.
We all saw films of what Brady was like, ranting and raving on the Patriots sidelines. And that's what Bill Belichick said right there. He's not going to brook any nonsense, Steve. And I don't care who screws up. They're going to hear about it from number 12. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Remember when Brady went off on Bill O'Brien? I mean, those two almost came to blows.
Absolutely. You guys saw this Football Life. They do a great job on those shows. And the one with Troy Aikman, I must have seen it about 9 times. Boy, the more I watched it, the more respect I had for Aikman. After Jimmy Johnson left, and they brought Switzer in, he felt nobody was held accountable on the team. Even though they managed to win one Super Bowl with Switzer, it all fell apart after that. And Aikman said he got tired of chewing guys' ass out. It was up to him to do it, and Switzer wouldn't do it. Well, if Arians will do it, but I'm telling you one thing, Brady will do it if he has to, Steve.
Yeah, he was asked about that, you know, on the Howard Stern show, and he said that he doesn't chew guys out. Now, we've seen him do that, but he sort of said, you know, nobody wants to F up, which is his exact quote, and, you know, he said that he'll go to coaches and say, I don't trust this guy, I'm not throwing him the football, or get him off the field, but he said he doesn't really lean on players, which I think we've seen the opposite, but, you know, maybe he was yelling at Bill O'Brien, like Lee said, maybe he was yelling, I told you I didn't trust that guy. Why'd you put him on the field? I mean, it'll be interesting to see who he cracks the whip on.
Here's one reason I don't think anybody's going to be immune to Brady's displeasure is Lee. He's a realist, and his window's closing. He can't be thinking, we got 8 years to develop these guys. If Bunting's in the wrong place on a defensive assignment, or Godwin runs the wrong route, Brady knows he's only got a year or two to finish up, Lee. I think that's going to be a driving force.
Yeah, you know, you're talking about Brady unloading on Bill O'Brien. I'm sure there's quite a few people in Houston that are going to join him.
Oh, yeah, after that Hopkins debacle. Oh, boy.
Then he goes out and says Hopkins was bringing his baby mamas around and his side chicks.
Hopkins is elite, and you don't get rid of your elite players unless they're a knucklehead like Antonio Brown.
And the coach throws the guy over under the bus, man.
Man.
One thing that I think gets overlooked as far as the pressure on Brady, there's going to be a lot of pressure on him. And he always has pressure on him, but not like he's ever experienced what he'll see this year with the media all over him even more. God forbid the Bucs go 0-2 and the Patriots go 2-0. Can you imagine what the national narrative would be on Brady and all the pressure on him? And like you said, Ira, that's going to translate to the Bucs players who aren't Brady because he's playing with a different level of urgency.
And, you know, that'll really gnaw at Brady, Steve, the disparity between what the Patriots are doing and what the Bucs are doing. Hopefully it tilts heavily towards the Bucs side. But, Lee, if it doesn't, you know, in Brady's mind, it's going to bring up all those things about who is more responsible for the Patriots dynasty. Brady thinks about things like that, Lee.
Does he?
I think he does.
Okay, because he was telling Stern that he doesn't think about that kind of stuff.
Well, what he told Stern and what the facts are, there's a gap in between.
It's kind of like saying that you don't walk around town thinking I'm the sage of Tampa Bay sports. I'm the sage, baby. You know, it's the same thing with Tom Brady.
You know, I like to pick my spots, Lee, with that beautiful black T-shirt that says the sage. I like to pick my spots, Lee. You know, I wore it to a wedding. You know, a couple months ago.
What?
People thought it was inappropriate. They're all dressed in formal wear, and I come as the sage. Come as you are, Steve. That's my philosophy. Come as you are.
One little funny anecdote, which is just classic Bucks, because I love the soap opera that is the Buccaneers. Guess what kicker, when Gostkowski went down last year for the Patriots, guess what kicker came in and was 14 of 17 on field goals and perfect on extra points?
Don't tell me Catanzaro.
Even better, Nick Folk.
Oh. Lee, they got to bring somebody in to compete with Gay in training camp. I don't care if Gay beats him out. But, Lee, a little competition, please.
A lot of competition. Gostkowski ought to be the first guy Light should have been on the phone with. The minute that guy was cut, Light should have been on the phone with his agent. This is nonsense. this kicking nonsense. I don't care if the guy was drafted or not. I mean, there was, I can't remember the specific numbers, but yay for the number of kicks he has. Something like, I want to say 75, or no, that's not 75, but let's just say 60. I'm just going to throw a number up. For kickers who kicked at least 60 attempts, no, only one other kicker had a worse percentage than Matt Gay for the number of kicks he had. Only one guy had a worse percentage. That's awful, man.
You know, Steve, here's a sentence I don't want to hear at all. From September through December or through January, if the Buck season goes that far. Here's the line I never want to hear. In those treacherous winds of the south end zone of Raymond James Stadium. I don't want to hear it, Steve. I don't want to hear it.
I don't know if you know this or not. Dome kickers had a better record at the Den of Depression than Matt Gay did.
Oh, my.
Dome kickers. Now, Bucks are trying to push that narrative, like, the south end zone is one of the worst places in the NFL to kick. Blah, blah. Well, how come dome kickers are kicking it? Dome kickers aren't used to kicking in the elements. Give me a break.
You know, Steve, the last thing I saw, Dale Mabry doesn't butt up against Lake Michigan or something. I mean, well, what the hell's going on around here? Treacherous winds.
It's silliness, and, you know, look, we're rooting for Gay, and if he didn't have a couple of rough games at the end of the season, he would have had a solid year, but it doesn't work that way. You can't just write off a couple of things. The idea is to play 20 or 19 games, not 16, and I'm just concerned that they won't get competition. I'm all for Gay winning the competition, but good golly, the guy needs pressure, and he needs it in training camp. He needs to be able to show that he can thrive under pressure. He ended on a downward note. Jason Light's raving about Ronald Jones, you know, and he ended on a high note. Well, you know what? Matt Gay ended on a low note, and Gostkowski actually was on the record today, Ira, speaking out. He's ready to play. He's all he's been doing is training, and part of that's just because he's just locked in a cage like we all are with this coronavirus, and he's ready to go. He wants to play this year. Would it kill them to bring him in?
Treacherous winds. You ever been to Foxborough in December, Lee? You ever been to Foxborough?
Thankfully, I've never been to Foxborough, although I heard the stadium's nice, but thankfully, I've never been there. I would suggest the Meadowlands are pretty brutal.
They are.
I would suggest Soldier Field's pretty nasty. I know the north end zone in Pittsburgh is very difficult to kick, no matter what time of the year it is, because that's on the riverside, and they have wind currents coming off the river.
Buffalo's no bargain either.
Buffalo's no bargain. Now, I remember Dirk Cutter, he didn't use it as an excuse. It was like an offhand comment. Like, if I remember correctly, I'm trying to quote him correctly, if I remember right. He said, yeah, by the way, it's weird, but there's some studies out there that show the south end zone at Raymond James is difficult to kick in. And then, you know, after he left, they still had kicking problems. They cited that thing every couple weeks. Well, this is the most difficult place to kick in the NFL. Give me a break.
You know, Steve, I think one of the calling cards from the Jason Light news conference, Steve, he must have said it 20 times. The overarching confidence he's got in the team's IT department. I mean, those people should be asking for raises right now, Isbitz.
Well, I thought it was fascinating, Ira. I'm so glad you mentioned this.
Yeah. Like anybody really cares.
And he used to love his analytics department, and I believe they dissolved it. There's another one for you. You should look into that, Ira. One thing I thought was interesting is Light was talking about, he actually said the words that the group, his personnel department, is not handicapped and that they are forging ahead and they like what they've been doing. And I asked him about showing film to prospects, you know, getting them on the whiteboard over the phone on Zoom. And he said, you know, we figured out how to do that. And we've been able to send them plays and all that stuff. So he said they're not handicapped. So my question to you, Ira and Lee, if the Bucks kick ass in this draft and they nail it, will Light actually make a big executive decision and say, you know what? We're going to draft the same way we did last year. Nobody goes on the road. We're going to talk to these guys by computer. We're going to dive in and watch 45% more film, and we're going to do it this way. You think that might happen, Ira?
I think if the Glazers have any say to it, Lee, it's going to happen.
You took the words out of my mouth.
If Light hits a home run, Lee, the Glazers are going to say, roll it again, boys. Roll it again.
I'll go one step further. If that happens, there'll be a meeting. There always is. There'll be a meeting with the Glazers and Jason Light and Bruce Arians. And one of the Glazer family members will say, Jason, you knocked it out of the park with the draft last year, and it was a virtual, you did your research virtually, you didn't travel anywhere, you did it just by interviews on Zoom and FaceTime, we're cutting your travel budget by 18 grand.
And Steve, you know what, if you were writing the chapter on this, you know what the title of it would be? Return to Tape. And Steve, how many times have you heard scouts say, executives, tape don't lie, tape don't lie? You know, these guys are so well trained in these interviews, Steve. They're tough to crack. They're very well prepared. They know every question you're going to throw at them. They lie. They fudge. You can't fudge on tape, Lee. Tape tells the tale.
Yep.
Well, you know what? I think that's more a function of the guys in the higher rounds. I'm not sure if these fifth, sixth, seventh round picks are as prepared as some of the other guys. That's just my opinion. And
right,
where you got to win the draft, in the sixth round and the seventh round, where you find these guys. But it'll be interesting. You know, of course, you know, we're logical. We realize that next year, if all the teams are wide open, able to do traditional scouting, Jason Light would probably say, well, you know, that's because we had a level playing field and we want to stay level. But it is an interesting concept if it really works that, you know, at least one team in the NFL you can guarantee is going to go all virtual next year and say, you know, we're going to roll the dice again and see what happens.
Hey, I got one more crazy scenario I want to run past Lee DeKemper for a second. Lee, I've been thinking about this. I think there's a 2% chance of this happening. 2%. So we're only going to spend, 45 seconds on it. But Lee, along the lines of what I was saying, you know, what I was asking Light about taking the best, you know, if this guy is the top ranked player on your board, and even if he's a position of strength, like a receiver. So Lee, here's another guy. Again, 2% chance of falling to 14. 2%. Isaiah Simmons. He's a stud. He's a hybrid, a safety slash linebacker. The guy's an impact player. Do they need a linebacker? Well, could always use an outstanding impact player. Lee, if the guy sits there at 14, I think you got to take him.
Here's one for you, Ira. And Steve can back me up on this. Steve, as well as I, we love listening to Bill Polian on NFL radio. He's so fantastic. He learns so much. He gets the nooks and crannies and down and deep how, why decisions are made, and it's just, you know, it's a treasure trove of football education listening to that guy. Polian is not, you know, he's not very exuberant on good players. He doesn't like, oh my gosh, this guy reminds me of this. He's not like that at all. He's more often than not will say, this guy's not perfect and this is why. But this Isaiah Simmons,
yeah,
Polian talks about him like I talk about Rachel Watts. I mean, he just gushes about this guy. And when he, I know this will get Bucks fans' attention. Those will get their antenna up. This is what he said about Isaiah Simmons. He said, this guy, if he gets put in the right defense, I'm telling you, is the next Derrick Brooks.
Wow.
He loves Isaiah Simmons.
Now,
and this
Steve,
guy's like, can play safety, yeah, can play linebacker, can play all over. Yes, Ira, I'm all over that guy.
We said it up front. 2% chance that it happens. He's going to go top 10. 2%. But you never know. Steve, they said the same thing about O.J. Howard. Nobody could believe Howard slipped to 19. So, Steve, if he's there, you got to take him.
Well, I don't know if you got to take him, Ira, but I understand what you're saying. And, yeah, I think it's probably even higher than a 2% chance. You know, there's a lot of misdirection out there, which we talked early in the podcast about. And, you know, that's what makes it fun. But, you know, I think a lot of Bucks fans would, I mean, they'd be excited by the first round pick, but gosh, if they took a safety after all the stuff they've done, that would be quite comical.
And I think Lee's alluding to it is, don't forget about Todd Bowles. Todd Bowles is always a big part of this picture, and Lee Bowles is good about putting his people in a position to succeed. He's good at it.
Uh oh, you're really revving Steve up here now.
Yeah, except he couldn't do it in New York, Ira, but he's really good at it. Come on.
Couldn't do it when he was a head coach?
Yeah, he couldn't
There's
do it as a head coach.
He had too many responsibilities, Steve. Just like Cutter with the Buck offense. Same thing, baby. Same thing.
Your podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford, BillCurryFord.com. Get over there, check out all the amazing offers right now from Ford and from Bill Curry Ford specifically. Fantastic stuff. Big Storm Beer, we encourage lots of Big Storm Beer purchasing and responsible consumption. And, of course, you can stock up for the draft, for your own personal draft party. They'll deliver, but you can find Big Storm anywhere. Great beer is sold. Go to the Storm Tracker at JoeBucksFan.com or BigStormBrewery.com to see the whole selection. And Sage, two quick ones and we'll get out of here. One, did you think it was a little bit curious? One of the reporters asked Jason Light today, when's the last time you physically were in the room with Bruce Arians? And Light struggled to answer the question. It felt like he was covering up. He's like, it's been a while. I thought that was comical. Did you find the comedy in that?
I did. And Lee, my takeaway from it is maybe those guys have been in the building and they shouldn't be in there, but they have been in the last week or two, and they do cross paths, you know, and with this pandemic, whether you believe in it or not, you know, social distancing is the rule. Lee, it sounds to me like he was hemming and hawing a little bit about that. So they might have broke some of Mike Pence's rules over there, Lee.
You know, I found out a better measurement of social distancing than 6 foot. If you're in public or something like that, not really sure what 6 foot is, just think of a Mike Glennon pass.
You mean an incompletion?
Not just one of those typical Mike Glennon passes short of the sticks. Yeah, that's about 6 foot.
Yeah, or a Doug Martin run.
Doug Martin run, yeah.
That's 2 yards, gentlemen. 2 yards.
Ira, your podcast can be found by the good people who have listened to the end here. The podcast is available at Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, all over the place. And we appreciate the many thousands who listen at JoeBucksFan.com. You were back in the top 50. Nationwide, Ira, last podcast.
Thank you, Stephen.
The Sage is impressive.
By the way, Steve, next time you talk to Sean Sullivan, Lee, you too. I know you guys chat quite a bit. See if you can pry a couple of Bill Curry Ford shirts out of them. Extra long, gentlemen. So I can proudly wear them as I traverse the aisles of my public supermarket. I'm in there all the time. You name an item, I'll give you the aisle. I would like to show off Bill Curry Ford, because, you know, with that cherry red Ford Escape, Steve, it would just complete the package. It would be a beautiful tandem.
All right, Sage, we are 2 weeks from the NFL draft. Your final thoughts for Buccaneers fans as we head into the distance back to our caves and our masks to continue producing Bucs coverage like no other. What do you want to say to the people?
I was given the privilege of asking the very first question to Jason Light, and my question was simple. How does the presence of Tom Brady affect your preparation and philosophy going into this draft? He hemmed, he hawed, he said it doesn't really change things. In other words, he dodged my question, Lee. But we don't dodge questions on this podcast. So I'm here to tell you, Mr. DeKemper, it changes everything.
Yeah.
It's all about 2020. Which players can give you the most immediate impact. And usually a general manager is supposed to take a long-term view and the coach takes the short-term view. Here, everybody is on board, and I'm even talking about the ownership level. Lee, there's no dichotomy here. Everybody is all about 2020, and that has to have a profound effect on the way they're going about this draft.
Oh, I agree with you. Yeah, it's got to be. I mean, if Brady wasn't going to change things, they wouldn't have got him in the first place.
That's right.
All right, get out of here, Sage. Have fun at Publix with the old ladies.